Steve Sander of the Associated General Contractors. Hello.
Hi, Ken. Nice to be with you.
Where are you today? Are you in D.C. or near? I'm
in Arlington, Virginia, in my office.
Arlington, Virginia. Okay, good deal. Tell me about this legislation that the Senate is considering. What are they looking at doing? What are they looking at enacting? Tell me about this.
Sure.
Pro
Act. Well, it's the most sweeping changes in federal labor policy in 85 years. And the PRO Act stands for Protect the Right to Organize. And that's a rather innocuous title because under federal labor law, employees have a right to organize and bargain collectively. They also have a right to choose not to organize and bargain collectively. And what the PRO Act does goes far beyond protecting that right. It expands it. It undermines employee free choice. And it provides unions with significant economic weapons that undermine the delicate balance that we have in labor management relations in this country.
Uh-huh. How so? Whose idea was this? Where did this come from?
Well, it came out of the House Education and Labor Committee and the Senate Labor and Human the Senate Labor Committee. It has 45 co-sponsors in the Senate. It's already passed the House. The 45 co-sponsors are all Democrats. And if you'd like, I can give you some specific examples that back up what I said in my opening comments.
Please do. Tell me about this. What's the ramifications and where does the idea for this come from?
Yeah, well, so let's first start. Well, actually, the idea comes from a concern from labor that they, in the private sector, they continue to be unable to organize employees because, you know, let's face it, we're not dealing with the 1920s anymore, where employees had no benefits, no rights. Now they do have rights. They have, laws providing for minimum wages. Obamacare requires employers to provide health care benefits. OSHA protects employees at the workplace on safety and health issues. And so there are a lot of employees that, you know, decide they really don't need to be unionized and don't need a union to protect their rights because they're already guaranteed through federal and state statutes. So let's stipulate that that's part of the problem is that unions, want to gain their market share, and they're going to try to do it through changes in labor law contemplated in the PRO Act. And some of the ways they want to do it is, they want to change the unlevel the playing field on how employees choose whether or not to be in a union. And let me tell you how that happens. So, under current law, a union wants to organize employees of a widget factory, and the way they do it is they go to individual employees and have them sign what's known as an authorization card. And that authorization card says, I would like the widget union to be my bargaining representative. And if they get 30% of the employees to sign those cards, then the NLRB conducts a secret ballot election. And under the PRO Act, during this process, the union is entitled to demand from the employer every employee's address, home telephone number, cell phone number, email address, and work schedule so that they would have unfettered access to be able to try to convince the employee to support the union. And then so after that, we have the election, and let's assume the union loses the election. Well, if during that authorization card process, they were able to get 50% plus one of the employees to sign those authorization cards, and the union nevertheless loses that election, they can go to the NLRB and say, you know, regardless of what the employees did in a secret ballot election, we have evidence that they truly support the union through these authorization cards. Now, let's take a step back and think about the scenario in which that authorization card was obtained. A union rep and perhaps a coworker shows up at your door one night and says, hey, I want you to sign this authorization card. Well, what does it do? Well, it says you support having the union. Well, so that employee is faced with, you know, either signing the card, or if they don't want to, you know, even if they don't want the union, or not signing the card and, you know, coming under pressure from the union and coworkers at work, you know, we really need you to sign the card, et cetera, et cetera. So it diminishes their free will, whereas the secret ballot election does not. And then if you go a little bit further on how this affects employees, what the bill does is it eliminates the prohibition on what are known as secondary boycotts. And the secondary boycott is where a union that has a dispute with a primary employer puts economic pressure on a secondary employer to try to encourage that secondary employer to not do business with the primary employer. And let me give you a hypothetical on that. So assume you have a hospital, and the hospital has a contract with a linen service that provides towel sheets and scrubs to the hospital. And that linen service happens to be non-union. And the local union that represents laundry workers is upset that the hospital has a contract with a non-union employer. Well, under the PRO Act, the laundry workers union can go to the hospital and say, we want you to fire your linen service, and we want you to contract with a employer that has a labor agreement with us. And the hospital administrator says, well, I can't do that. We have a contract with that vendor. And if I were to get rid of that vendor, I would be liable for breach of contract and the damages that are in that contract. And the union goes, well, that's your problem, not ours. And they put a picket line up in front of the hospital that says, the hospital is unfair to labor because it has hired a non-union linen service. Mm-hmm. So then the union goes to the nurses union and says, hey, we have a picket line out in front of the hospital. We need you to honor that picket line. Well, the nurses really don't care who the hospital contracts with for their linens,
the nurses have a union too. The nurses are unionized.
That's right.
In most cases.
That's right. That's right. So the nurses honor that picket line. And so basically they are going to forego their wages, to support the, an unaffiliated, unrelated union, to put pressure on a unaffiliated, employer, the laundry service. So the hospital administration is faced with, you know, handle this strike? Can they live through the strike? Or do they go to that linen service and say, you're gone? And they have to eat the damages that, that the contract says they have to pay for breach. And what happens to those employees of that linen service? Well, they're kicked to the curb. They're out of work. Because they've lost a customer. And so that's the economic harm. And so, you know, your listeners might wonder, well, wait a second, can't the hospital discipline those nurses for not coming to work? And under the PRO Act, the answer is no, because the PRO Act says that employees can strike or picket at any time and for any reason. So that would completely change the delicate balance that exists that limits the amount of economic weapons that unions have to be able to put pressure on employers to acquiesce to their demands.
Mr. Sandher, there seems to be, and this is just my opinion here from hearing what you're saying and also mm-hmm. from reading the information on this, there seems to be a lot of coercion involved in this act. It's, see, there's a lot of coercive activity, and it seems to me to kind of go back to, if you will, mob tactics in a way, if you will.
Well, I wouldn't go quite so far, but it takes us back to a time really between 1935 and 1947 when all of these weapons and rights that unions had were enacted in the National Labor Relations Act, and there was no countervailing obligations on the union to act responsibly. And that's, and in 1947, recognizing the excesses that unions had at the time and the disruption they had in the economy, Congress passed the Taft-Hartley Act, which provided more balance in labor management relations. And that's been the law of the land ever since. What the unions want to do is to go back to this, you know, period, a brief period between 1935 and 1947, where they had all the cards at the table.
Mm-hmm. What are the chances of this passing? If you say there are 45 yeah. sponsors or co-sponsors,
right.
That's almost half.
That's right.
What do yeah. you think?
Well, those 45, they're all Democrats, the chance of this passing likely depends upon the fate of the filibuster. And there are a lot of Democrats in the Senate that want to get rid of the filibuster. And if the filibuster were to go, then you'd only need 50 Democrats plus one, plus the vice president to pass the bill. And so currently, the business community, if the filibuster goes, needs to hold all 50 Republicans and pick up one of the Democrats. And the five Democrats who are not yet co-sponsors are Senators Kelly and Sinema from Arizona, Senator Warner from Virginia, Senator Manchin from West Virginia, and Senator King from Maine. The business community's work is cut out for us in trying to educate those five Democrats and all 50 Republicans to make sure they're fully aware of the ramifications of this bill. And what is challenging for us is, you know, it's basically, it took me a long time to explain the ramifications to you and your audience, whereas the proponents of the bill have, you know, a bumper sticker measure. Employees have a right to organize and bargain collectively, and all this bill does is to reaffirm that right and protect their interests. That's basically their argument, and they hope that nobody really reads the bill or understands what's in it.
Yeah, yeah. What effect do you see this having on your association, the Associated General Contractors yeah. of America? What do you yeah. see as, you know, if this passes, what happens yeah. to you guys?
Yeah, well, interestingly, we represent both union and non-union employers. Interestingly, again, our union employers are just as much concerned about this bill as our non-union employers. I was asked the other day by a contractor, what do I think is the worst part of this bill? And my answer was, the elimination of the secondary boycott prohibition, which is what I just explained in the hospital hypothetical.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
the reason that it, under current law, if you're a union contractor and on any construction site, it's a multi-employer site. You have a general contractor and you have an electrical subcontractor, a plumbing subcontractor, a mechanical subcontractor, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And if, let's assume the electrical subcontractor is negotiating a new agreement on with the electrical workers union, and they're having a hard time reaching an agreement, and the electrical workers union goes on strike and puts a picket line up in front of that construction project. Well, under current law, what the general contractor can do is to have a gate at that job site that's reserved only for the employees of the electrical subcontractor. And if the electrical workers union puts up a picket line at that gate, then the union employees of other subcontractors and of the general contractor can enter another gate and not have to honor that picket line. They can continue to work. Under the PRO Act, the ability to have that reserve gate for the employees of the electrical subcontractor goes away, and they can pick up the entire job site. And in so doing, that puts a lot of pressure on that general contractor to tell the electrical subcontractor, you know, either settle your contract, give the union what they want, or we're going to have to find another subcontractor to do the electrical work because this project can't be delayed. Mm-hmm. Similarly, let's assume that on a construction job site, that electrical subcontractor is a non-union subcontractor, but he's working, his employees are working on that project with other union employers. And the union is going after that electrical subcontractor because they want that subcontractor to sign a union agreement. And the electrical workers union can shut down that entire job site. And when the general contractor says to the electrical subcontractor, look, either sign the agreement with the union, or I have to kick you off the project because I can't have the project delayed. So that's what's known as top-down organizing. And this gives the unions a lot more tools to organize open shop employers through this top-down secondary pressure.
Is this an idea of the unions to try to get more membership, to try to kind of turn the ship around for unions, if you will?
Sure, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, in the private sector, the participation of workers in unions is far below 10%, and that raises mm-hmm. another interesting issue. You know, one of the reasons that a lot of employees choose not to join a union and not to have a union be their bargaining representative is because in many cases the money that they pay in dues and fees is used for political purposes that individual employee may not agree with. And they don't want to be supporting political causes and political candidates that they have beliefs different from theirs. And let's give a good example of that. You know, recently President Biden canceled the Keystone Pipeline. You had 10,000 union workers on that pipeline. Ironically, the unions that represented those employees endorsed President Biden in the election. I bet a lot of those workers that lost their jobs because of President Biden's action are wondering why in the world did they pay union dues to unions that supported a candidate that they knew was going to cancel the Keystone Pipeline and allow them to lose their jobs.
What's the timeline here on this PRO Act here? What are we looking mm-hmm. at here? Are we looking at a deadline here?
Yeah, it all depends, again, on, it all comes down to the filibuster rule. If the filibuster goes away and the proponents of the bill can count 50 votes in the Senate, it'll happen as soon as they get those 50 votes committed. There's a lot at stake with the Senate keeping the filibuster rule.
Mm-hmm. All right. So I guess there's the gauntlet thrown down. What do people do outside of I guess the thing is yeah. call your congressman, call your senator, something.
Well,
like that.
Yeah. Unfortunately, it's too late to call your congressman, but it's not too late to call your senator. Yeah, even if your senator is a co-sponsor of the bill, they shouldn't believe that that a majority of people buy into everything that's in this bill, and they need to justify their support for it. And they need to do it to the people who vote for them and put them in office.
Mm-hmm. Right. I'm sure the Associated General Contractors have a website that has some information about this.
Yes, it's advocacy.agc.org.
advocacy.agc.org.
Correct.
There we go. Dr. Sandher, I've got to run along here, but I thank you for stopping by.
Yeah.
And best to you in Arlington. And
thank you. Thanks for the
best wishes on this bill here. So
thank you. Thanks for the opportunity to talk about it with you.